We want to begin by welcoming everyone here this morning. It's encouraging to see you out on a rainy day to come and worship God. We have a few visitors, and we appreciate your presence. I don't know if you're acquainted with the Church of Christ or not, but just a short little history of it. When people came to the United States, one of the big things they were looking for was religious freedom. They'd gone through a Reformation movement, trying to reform the things that were, and they finally figured out that you can't do that. And so they began a restoration movement, primarily in this country, trying to get back to the Bible. The Church of Christ is pretty much the epitome of that movement, trying to go back and just do what God tells us to do, first century Christianity, strictly from the Bible. So our worship services seem maybe a little bit simpler than other places you go, and probably a little quieter. But we're just following the New Testament pattern. In fact, that's one of the things we were looking at this morning with Moses and the tabernacle. In fact, as I'd rather put it the way the Hebrew writer did, Hebrews 8:5, where he says Moses was warned by God, "See to it that you make it according to the pattern." And so that's what we're doing. We're heeding God's warning. I mean, he's quoting that in order to make sure that now that we have something more than just a pattern, the actual thing that Moses was looking at, we are even more obligated to make sure we do it exactly as God commands us to do it. That's why we encourage you to take out your Bibles and follow with us in the lesson this morning. We're in 2 Corinthians. We just finished up Philippians and Colossians. And actually, I'm going back to something we did before from the first chapter of 2 Corinthians when we looked at the God of all comfort. I'm going to take you a little bit farther along to 2 Corinthians, the third chapter. We're going to look at the context of verses 1 through 11. And we're just looking at sort of highlights of these books, looking at some of the things that God has revealed to us, and particular insights that we've been given into the law of God and what God expects from us. In this context, I've broken it down into each man a letter of Christ, also the surpassing glory, which Paul's going to reveal to us, and also the contrast between the old covenant and the new. As we begin here, I should see the third chapter, verses 1 through 3. Are we beginning to commend ourselves again? Paul is dealing with a problem that's arisen among the Corinthians. Evidently, there have been some teachers that have come in with letters of recommendation, probably from Jerusalem, and were saying things against the things that Paul had already taught. He says, or do we need as some letters of recommendation? We'll cover that in a moment. To you or from you. You are our letter written in our hearts, known and read by all men, being manifested that you are a letter of Christ, cared for by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, and not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. When Paul talks about each man being a letter, the kind of letter background thing that happened back then. In fact, we still do it nowadays in some aspects. But there was letters of recommendation. When somebody, a stranger, would come in, he had the foggiest idea what kind of character they are or how much you can depend on them. So what really aided this was a record of recommendation, a letter from someone else that the recipient knew. In the papyri, one such was discovered as a letter to Julius Domitius, military tribune of the legion from Aurelius, his beneficiarius. That last word means he was an individual who was a soldier that was so accredited and so privileged that he was not expected to do menial tasks. They knew each other, but what he's doing, he says, "Greeting, I have already before this recommended to you Theon." my friend, and now also I ask you, sir, to have him before your eyes as you would myself. For he is a man such as to deserve to be loved by you. For he left his own people and his business and followed me, and through all things he has kept me safe. This is a unique individual and worthy of recommendation. And so as he's passed on from one soldier to another, one captain of whatever legion to another, he's highly recommended. Now, we also find these things, these letters of recommendation in scriptures. There's a short one in the book of Romans by Paul to the church at Rome in the 16th chapter, where Paul says, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, who is a servant of the church which is at Cenchrea, that you receive her in the Lord in a manner worthy of the saints, and that you help her in whatever manner she may have need of you, for she herself also has been a helper of meeting of many, of myself included. Romans 16, 1 through 2. There's a more extensive letter of recommendation, which we have in the epistle of Philemon, where Paul says sends the slave Onesimus back to his master Philemon with a letter of recommendation. That's what the book of Philemon is a recommendation that, you know, this is your slave that ran away. He found me. We've been working together. He's become an exceptional servant, and now I commend him back to you. If there's any problems, you know, any debts owed, Paul says he'll stand for them. So this is what he's talking about, these kind of letters of recommendation. And it seemed from his previous statements that Paul was perhaps commending himself, or others were, you know, kind of putting him down. But it's not the case or the need. So Paul goes right to the source. He said, the apostle states that the only testimonial that they need is themselves. All they had to do was look at themselves. Had Paul preached the gospel of Jesus Christ among them? If he had and he did it right, and they received it properly, they should see the change in their lives. They were a living testimony. They were a letter from Christ. And they didn't need ink on paper. In fact, this concept is not new. Long before, Plato had said that the good teacher does not write his message in ink that will fade or in words that cannot speak. He finds a disciple and sows the seed of the message in a heart that understands. Once you've converted a disciple, then you've got a living proof of the wisdom or whatever it is you're teaching. Now, we're not going to say that Plato came up with the idea of this, because this idea precedes even Plato. In Jeremiah 31:31, which is quoted in Hebrews 8, that same thing is talked about what God had planned. A new covenant, which would be written on the human heart. Yeah, so God had this kind of insight of what was really important. And Paul is picking this up to the Corinthians. So you got something better than just a letter of ink, you know, or as he'll get into it, but you have a testimony of yourselves, your own hearts. In fact, even now a church is judged by the kind of man it creates. A businessman is known by the wares he sells. A craftsman is known by the kind of crafts he turns out, the quality of them. So a church is known by the kind of people, it turns out. If they're truly preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, that should be evident in the nature and character and behavior of the people that worship there. If it is lacking, then it's a testimony to something else. So Christ has written, not with fading ink or on tablets of stone, but with the Spirit of God upon our hearts, hopefully. Anyway, Paul takes this further. He says, such confidence we have through Christ toward God, not that we are adequate in ourselves to consider anything as coming from ourselves, but our adequacy is from God, who also made us adequate as servants of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit, for the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. Paul is quick to insist that, you know, if you look at, you know, the job that was done in Corinth, the kind of change that's occurred among, you know, the people there, and if you knew the history of Corinth, you knew that if they had become true Christians, there was a great change in their morals and everything else. Although some of it sounds like self-praise, he wants them to know that all the work is really not his, but the Lord's. God is just working through him. The word among the Hebrews for God Almighty, El Shaddai, was not always translated Almighty by the Hebrews. Sometimes they translated it or looked at it as all-sufficient, which kind of, you know, means the same thing. God is all-sufficient. He provides everything. You know, he does everything. And this sufficiency or adequacy, Paul says, is being passed on to his servants. If they are adequate or if they are getting the job done, they don't get the credit. Paul is quick to give God all the credit for the work done. Give you an example, something of what we also should be, this effect of changing our own lives. Someone brought up the example of Harriet Beecher Stowe. She produced the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin. And it caught on right away. There was 300,000 copies that were made the first year. And then it was translated in all sorts of languages. It went worldwide. Lord Palmerston, someone said, he hadn't read a novel for 30 years. But when, you know, he got Uncle Tom's Cabin in his hand and read it, he said, he praised it for its statesmanship. Now, there's a word we don't use much anymore, or refer to politicians as statesmen, because few of them are. A statesman is someone who puts more interest in the country he serves than in himself. This book, according to Lord Palmerston, is something that did that. You know, it was a work that seemed to make Harriet Beecher Stowe a statesman. You know, something that would profit her country. Lord Cockburn was a very accomplished attorney. He declared that it had done more for humanity than any other fiction. Tolstoy, who wrote War and Peace, like I said, it got around the world. When he read it, he said it was one of the greatest achievements of the human mind. When he asked Miss Stowe, you know, what she thought of all this, she refused to take the credit. She said the work wrote itself. At night when she slept, it came to her in visions. And she felt that she was only the instrument of God. Gave him the credit. We need to do the same thing as Christians, as Paul was doing. If whatever we accomplish in this life, you know, if it's good and honorable and true and all that, is God getting the credit for it? It shows what's been written on our hearts, what kind of effect the gospel has had on us, if we are changed, when we realized that we, as Jesus told his disciples, I'm the vine, you're the branches. If I'm in you and you're in me, you know, we'll bear much fruit. Because without me, you can do nothing. Christ is the power and the wisdom behind it all. What Paul says is we're merely servants of a new covenant. And we're kind of looking at this morning in the class, talking about a testimony. A covenant, you know, has been likened to an agreement among men, but it's one-sided. as the Bible puts it forward. It's an agreement between God and man in which God offers conditions which man can neither initiate nor alter. He has got no say-so in it at all. God is the one that puts out all the terms and all the benefits, the rewards, or the warnings or whatever. Man can only accept it or reject it. That was true under the old covenant. It's also true among the new one. Now, as we talk about a new covenant, there's two words for new in the Greek. One is neos, which means just new and pointing to you, and nobody's ever seen it before. That's not quite true of the new covenant. The word that's used is kainos, as in new, fresh, different in quality. It brought in a superior element, quite different in kind and quality from the old covenant. It produces a totally different relationship between God and man. So as Paul puts it, but if the ministry of death, the old covenant, in letters engraved on stone came with glory so that the sons of Israel could not look intently at the face of Moses because of the glory of his face, fading as it was, how will the ministry of the Spirit fail to be more with glory? For if the ministry of condemnation has glory, much more does the ministry of righteousness abound in glory. For indeed, what had glory in this case has no glory because of the glory that surpasses it. For if that which fades away was with glory, much more that which remains in glory. A little mouthful there, but it's you can follow it. We're looking at a contrast, or Paul's making a contrast, between the two covenants, the old and the new. The old covenant was based on a written document. You can see the development of it in Exodus 24, verses 1 through 8. We've just been looking at that. Moses read it to the people, and they agreed to it. A written document, though, a book, a code, is always something that is external. It is imposed on a man who agrees to it from the outside. A man may obey the written code while all the time he wishes to disobey it, maybe even destroy it. Look at our own laws. People, young people say, rules were made to be broken. They may understand and obey most of the stuff that's out there only because of fear of law enforcement, but often will exceed the speed limit, even though it's a posted law. They don't agree with it. They'll keep it if they say the black and white, parked on the side of the road, but, that's the way this sort of stuff is, unfortunately. We can see it, even in our country, while we're under a constitution and our leaders take an oath to uphold it, even some of our leaders have expressed their desire to get rid of it. The old was a deadly thing. But the worldly nature in man could not keep it. That's what made it deadly. It killed hope because they couldn't keep it. Paul said, we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, Romans 3:23. That is, God intended us to be one way, Genesis, the first chapter, verse 26. We were created in his image, but we've been unable to keep the laws that were laid down. Maybe even trying to, but not being able to, and therefore kind of despising them. If there's something that you can't quite attain to, you lose hope after a while. It was something that killed life. If you couldn't keep it, Paul talks of it as a law of condemnation. Now, if you're condemned as breaking the law, then you're also sentenced to death. It also killed strength. It's hard to keep on doing something, that you're just, you're always behind, always falling short of. That you don't have. It seems, read Paul's stuff in Romans 7 about the man who wants to do the right thing but can't do the right thing. The law of God that he agrees to, but the law of the flesh that constantly consumes him. it gets bone weary after a while. So Paul says, you know, what you should be looking at is then the new covenant. It's based on the power of life-giving spirit. Now, we're not talking about the Spirit of God coming in and taking over you, as some would. We're talking about the words that the Spirit has given us, the Scriptures. Okay? As the work of the Spirit changes a man's very heart, as you read it, as you read the Bible, as you read the Scriptures, and you obey them. You know, if you accede to them, you know, you believe in them, that it's better. I mean, that's already, it's won over the heart. And as you begin to obey, you see that God's wisdom is greater than anything else. You know you've got something special. When the Spirit comes into a man's heart and controls it, not only does he not break the code, he does not even wish to break it. The new was a relationship of love. That is, it wasn't just boundaries where God's saying you can't go beyond this. It was actually setting up a goal. It was a goal of love. You know, he wanted us a certain kind of character. He wanted us back to what he originally intended to. And so he worked to bring this about. We talked about this last week. Most people know John 3:16, but it's not that, you know, we're talking about the passion of God, that he loved God and the man so much that he gave his own son. No, substitute the word with the word so, the word thus. Okay? God thus loved the world. He gave his own son. It was part of the plan in order to work toward the goal, so that man would not lose heart. Now, there's still some passion in it, of the love, but primarily we're looking at something that God wanted something done, and he's working toward it. You can see this in Ephesians, the fourth chapter, I think around verse 25, where it talks about we're to put off the old self and put on the new man according to the likeness of God. Romans 8:29, that you know, predestined to become conformed to the image of his son. So the whole purpose of Christianity, and we looked at it, you know, last week with Colossians, is to help work, you know, using the techniques that God has given us to transform ourselves by the renewing of the mind. That's why Paul starts Romans 12. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present yourselves, you know, as a living sacrifice. What does that mean? The Christian sacrifice is not some dead animal. It's their own lives. That's what your sacrifice is. Putting off the old man of sin and putting on a new man. That's your whole purpose. And how is this done? But not by being conformed to this world. This is verse 2 of Romans 12. By being transformed. Okay? We explained this before. I just love the comparison. The Greek also had two words for form. One was schema. It's where we get our word schematic from, you know, an outward representation of something. To the Greek mind, the outward representation of man, the outward form of man, constantly changed. I mean, you start off small, you know, you grow bigger, you know, you may become, you know, lose a hand or something like that, something changes on the form. Or you get bald or ugly or who knows. You know, something's always constantly changing with the schema. To the Greek mind, though, the morphe was the form of man that never changed it. Something on the inside. We still talk of it this way, where young people say, I want to go out and find myself. I want to find out who I really am. Paul says, that's garbage. Because the word he uses for transform is metamorphe. Meta means to change, and what you're changing is what the Greek thought you couldn't change. You change the morphe by the renewing of your mind, rethinking things. We looked at that last week. You know, what does God give us? A different insight, a different perspective, a different moral code, a better conscience. All this is part of the Christian life. And it's written on the heart. The new was a relationship of love. It was a relationship of a father to sons. In fact, the Hebrew writer says even this, Moses was just a servant in the house, but Christ was a son. And that's a different relationship. And what the son came to do, Hebrews 2, is to make more brethren like himself, that we become part of the family. Okay, a servant, he breaks the rules just like that, he gets severely punished. A son, you're a little bit more tolerant with. You know, you make allowances. And this is what God is doing with us as Christians. He's making allowances, hopefully, until we grow up, become more matured. It changed the heart, making a person a new man. The fifth chapter of 2 Corinthians, we're going to get into this new creation, this new creature that God is making, molding, into his own image. And with it, the commands brought power. Now you no longer had a high priest or a priest you went to or whatever. Now, as a son in the house, you have the privilege, and only the courage, the Hebrew writer says, to approach the throne of grace with confidence. God listens to your prayers joyfully. He wants to give you what Paul says in Ephesians, over and above all we ask or think. And that gives us power to life, God working directly in our lives. In Romans 8, again, Paul says, we know that God causes all things to work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called according to his purpose. So if you're called according to God's purpose, there's power in your life. Everything that God is working, that cohesion, all the things he's got working together from the farthest star whatever workings of the human mind, that's all for your benefit. There's power in your life. The old came with glory that faded. You see this in reference to Exodus 34:30. When Moses went on the mountain, because he stood in the presence of God, when he came down, his face was glowing. And Paul says what he did was put on the veil to show them that the glory was fading. The new covenant is not that way. It is with a glory, and this is the surpassing glory that Paul talks about, is it doesn't fade. In fact, the more it becomes in your life, it should increase in your life, becoming brighter. It's the glory of God living in you, written on your heart, making you something different. The old was good. And Paul says that in Romans 7. He doesn't put down the old law. He says it was great for the time. In Galatians 3, he says, but its purpose was to bring us to Christ. And too often what people do is, because it's so familiar to them, they want to stay with what's second best instead of accepting what is better than anything. And that's the new covenant that God has given us, made possible through the sacrifice of his son. This really, we're going to stop for an invitation. Just to think about what God has presented to man. It is a new hope. It's the fulfillment of everything of the old. And therefore, it is far greater and far better. Not only because of benefits and stuff like that, but it makes you, if you accept it, a different person, a far better person, a child of God, recognized by God as one of his sons or daughters, however you want to look at the terminology. That gives you power and life. I mean, this is the invitation that God's extending. Do you want something better? Sometimes we put ourselves, we struggle. And in fact, recently Nancy and I joined In Shape, the gym over here. And one day I was sitting there, pushing all this stuff. And I go, if God had wanted us to push this much weight, we would have been born on Jupiter. Bigger gravity and all stuff. Anyway, that was a down moment for me. We struggle and strain, and we work to make our bodies better. I guess you can go on luminosity now. That's the big thing that's out there to make your mind better. But what God gives you makes everything better. Body, mind, spirit. Makes you stronger, smarter, more mature, wiser. I mean, that's what God's trying to give us back, what our original legacy and heritage was. That's the invite. Make us new creatures, better than the world, not caught up in the world, looking toward a better world, transcending this world into something far beyond us, far beyond even our imagination. What is it going to be like to have a translated body that can live in the presence of God and constantly give praise for the glory that shines upon us because of its loving nature, because of its goodness, because of the constant blessings that come every second? We're going to be overwhelmed, and we can't picture that, unfortunately. But hopefully we can, through imagination, get a glimmer of just knowing that it's something better than what we have. In fact, if you want to look at it in the negative, in Hebrews, the 12th chapter, where it talks about the sacrifice of Jesus and his death upon the cross, the agony and everything, what made him do it? How could you suffer through something like that? Well, it says he did it for the joy set before him. He knew where he was going, and it was imminent. And therefore, whatever life had to throw at him, it was, like Paul says, momentary light affliction. That's something else you get from God. A way of looking at life where the problems of life are minuscule, small little things that are slightly endured for a glory that's far greater and outweighs everything. And this is what God extends to us. If we're willing to accept this new covenant, this fresh covenant, this one that's the quality of it is greater than anything that we've ever known. We begin by having our sins washed away through baptism. We begin by a reconstruction of the way we think, of our actions, our behaviors, of the way our life is going. We can start fresh and begin a journey into a new one. If we can help you with that this morning, please let us know as we stand to sing.